Welcome to the Financial Coconut Podcast Network, the leading personal finance podcast network in Singapore. I'm your host, Reggie, aka your chief financial coconut. Every Wednesday, you will be updated on the latest market happenings with TFC Market Updates, hosted by Rakesh and Anthony, with some friends crashing from time to time. If you want to get this show and other investment-focused content on a separate curated feed, I will strongly recommend you follow our investing podcast, TFC Investors Network. All you need to do is search on your favorite podcast platform, TFC Investors Network, and be all geeky about investing only.
Hello, coconuts. Welcome to another weekly episode where we scour the net to find worthy financial news for you. This week on TFC, we decided to stay a little local. So first, we're going to talk about Olam Plan's listing for Olam Agri. Right? We've been talking about this. Rather, Olam has been talking about this for a few years. Let's see what they have in store for us. They did come up with some news today. Property Guru had their earnings as well. Is this a potential for them? Are they actually looking at a good market in the next 6 months? And last but not least, Samsung earning guidance. Right? They have some early guidance before their actual earnings call. We discussed that all in this episode. Thank you so much. Hope you're having a good 2023. Let's get to it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, coconuts. Welcome to another episode of Weekly Market Updates with me, Rakesh.
And Anthony. Welcome to a new week, right? Hey. Second week of the year. I'm back to work,
it
finally.
Is. Hopefully. Yes, finally people are back to work. Hopefully you guys are too. We started to see the trains a lot more busy, makan places a lot more busy.
Is it terrible? I have to start going back to office already. It's terrible.
Oh, sian. Yeah, what is this? Actually, on that note, did you see the Disney CEO, Bob Iger, actually say you have to return back to the office?
Uh-huh. I mean, he's old, right? What do you expect? I don't know.
When I read that, I was like, that's basically like a Singapore CEO saying the same thing. Everyone go back to office. Hey,
no, sorry. It's our Singapore CEO, like him, saying the same thing, okay?
Hey. Wow. You see, if Disney allow that, you also must do.
Mm. Correct. Like SPH inflate their figures, we also must do. Everybody come and download our podcast a bit more. Thank you very much. No, use your phone, your akong's phone, your ama's phone, your mother's phone. Hey. Everybody come and listen to one podcast.
Yes. Then get proper unique listens also.
Yes, that's why.
Awesome. Coconuts, hope you're back at work listening to us either on the train or on commute. At least that's when we realize most people listen to us. So thank you again for giving us your valuable time. For this week, we have three stories. We decided to go a bit more local, Anthony, this week.
Yeah, very local. at the very least, very Asian.
Yeah, that's true. So we're going to kick things off with Olam planning listing for Olam Agri. We're going to kick things off with Property Guru that has its earnings. And last but not least, we're going to talk a little bit about Samsung's early earning guidance.
Yeah.
All right. Anthony, kick things off with Olam.
All right. Olam, right. I would like to say a company close to my heart, but not really. it's one of those. It's like, I keep getting Olam and Vilma mixed up, right? Like, they are both like agricultural, you know, commodity traders to me. And I just always get confused between the two of them. Olam, it's been quite a long-running saga, actually. I think they announced a restructuring in 2020 to kind of split their business. I mean, they were saying, we're trading at a deep discount to our true value, you know, we need to realize some value and unlock it for shareholders and sort of thing. So we're going to do a whole restructuring. It's 2 years later, three years later, we're in 2023 now, and we are kind of at like stage two of the restructuring. There's like two more stages to go. So essentially, they were supposed to split into Olam Agri, Olam Food Industries and, you know, Legacy Olam, which is like random stuff left over, right? And okay. Yeah, like literally, it's like their ventures business, their technology business, whatever it is. Essentially, if you look at the annual report, it's loss making, right? That's the only part of the business that's loss making. So they announced their latest step in the restructuring today, literally today, 10 January, which was to say that, Olam Agri is going to list in the Singapore and Saudi Arabia, which is kind of random. And it will be the first, you know, company listed in these two countries specifically. And I think it's also the first non-Gulf incorporated business that will list in Saudi Arabia.
Huh. Yeah. Why did they say anything reason why they listed in Saudi?
I think it's they didn't expressly say it, but it's just because as part of this whole process last year, Olam actually sold, I think, 35% of Olam Agri to one of the Saudi Arabian funds.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, so it was something that closed 3 weeks back, actually. There was a that closed 3 weeks back. Right. And 3 weeks later, they said, I'm going to IPO.
Okay. This guy's okay, so that would makes a bit more sense, lah.
Yeah.
Why SG and Saudi, right?
Yeah. SG kind of makes sense. Saudi.
Yeah. So that's Olam Agri. What's happening with the other couple of things?
Yeah. So Olam Food Industries was also meant to list. It was meant to list in 2022 in London, right? So they said they're going to list in London and Singapore about £2 billion. So about 2.8 SGD. SGD, but then, you know, the market went crazy. The Russian invasion started, which is obviously bad for food, and with Russia and Ukraine being, like, you know, huge wheat producing countries, so they just kind of paused that IPO for a bit, and hopefully they're waiting for, and what they're saying is, you know, we still want to do it, we're just waiting for better market conditions, so we wait.
Okay. Clearly no urgency there, but all right. So
yeah,
say they want to unlock potential value for investors and stuff like this.
It's not too bad. Like if you bought, like, I think in January 2020 when they first announced it, it would have been $1.70, something like that. You would have got like 5 cents, you've got 5% dividends every year. Now it's at $1.60 something. So you wouldn't really have lost money, right, on a total return basis over 3 years, you know, compared to a lot of other stocks. Slow and steady, you know? I think the hope is that once all these individual businesses get spun out, they get valued kind of on their own, you know, maybe food security really becomes a thing and that there's more demand for wheat and all that, for stockpiling and that boosts their profits, then ta-da, right? You have made a lot more money as an existing Olam shareholder, because the plan is that you'll get stocks in all these companies when they spin off and when they list separately.
Yeah, well, at least that's the plan. But have they talked about those sort of schedules and all that? Or
No, I mean they don't commit to anything, which is fair. Like it would have been kind of stupid to say, I commit to like a third quarter 2022 listing, and then Ukraine gets invaded, and you go, shit, I still want to list, right? That just doesn't work. So it's fair. They have shareholder approval to proceed. They'll just go ahead as management, you know, sees fit, which might not be a bad thing. I don't know.
Fair. So then, what's the play here, right? With Olam,
There's quite a few. The first is, you know, and this goes way 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 back to 2022, and when we first started talking about Ukraine and Russia, that food security and commodities and food commodities really might become a thing, right? And the reality of that is that, hey, we have a relatively huge global player right in our market. That's one. Two is, in terms of valuation, it's not super demanding at this stage, right? So I think the market cap of Olam Group, the current list co, is what, 6.5 billion Singapore dollars? Decent. You know, even if we take Olam Agri, right, at its what $4.5 billion valuation a month back, although they should list for higher, then you know, that's and Olam Agri is like 75% of profit. So hey, you know, you can quite easily get up to like a $7-8 billion company without much effort, right? And you know, just based on some sort of, you know, weird sum of the parts type valuation, or if not, you just buy Olam shares now. You wait for Olam Agri to come up, and then you sell Olam shares and just hold Olam Agri, right? So there's I think many different ways of, like, I think in theory the unlocking of shareholder value is correct because each part gets valued on its own and you get to own each individual part rather than the conglomerate, so you lose that conglomerate discount. I think that's fair. I think, and if you get paid 5% a year as dividends to while they wait, that's also not too bad.
It's decent.
Maybe it's one of those things where you kind of wait for drops. I mean, don't buy on days like today when they announce it. You know, the market will tank, and then you'll buy it at like $1.40, $1.50. And then, you know, it will slowly rise again as these things progress, and then you can decide what to do. Right? So it's not one of those very exciting, like snowflake, you know, 10% up, 10% down a day.
Yeah.
Right? It's one of those slow and steady. You know there will be catalysts coming up. So, hey, you know, might be a decent, you know, medium-term hold.
Yeah.
And you get paid to do so. So. You know,
yeah, and it's a decent dividend as well.
Yeah, 5% is great. I mean, exactly. Better than T-bills. There's risk, of course, but better than T-bills and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with the current volatility in the market and all this, and we've been talking about this over the last couple of weeks, right? This could be a good angle for coconuts who are looking to put a little bit of money locally, right? And slow and steady sort of wins the race. We've been talking about that. This could be another angle for you, coconuts. So yeah, do your research, have a look. And hopefully you can make some buck as well.
Yeah, or you know, just tell us what you think. Like if you think Olam is silly and stupid, no, just tell us and tell us why. Yeah. I think that'd be good.
Yeah, so we also will know lah. Yeah,
that's right. Don't just keep it to yourself. Good things must share.
yes, absolutely. So speaking of, you know, slow and steady wins the race, we've now moved on to our next topic, which is Property Guru.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This one not so much slow and steady, lah.
That's why I just think, hey, this one, look at the revenue growth, man. That's
yes. So, I mean, for coconuts out there, we did bring up Property Guru, what is it, last year?
Yeah.
When
they went public. March last year. Exactly. God.
March last year. There we go. Right. And but they went public via a SPAC, got listed at $10. I think it briefly went up to $12.50, and currently it's sitting happily at around a $4.80 range or $5 range and so on.
All right.
So they just had their earnings call. Then they said that they have made a $5.3 million net loss. Right? They're effectively not making money.
In a quarter or a year?
I believe it to be the quarter.
Ah, okay.
For the quarter ended September 30th.
Yep.
Correct. Sorry, 5.3 million USD, right? So Singapore dollars is 7.4 million, just to put it into perspective there, for the quarter. That said, they mentioned that their third quarter revenue actually increased by 47%.
Okay.
All right. What does this mean? So this year, they put it as a $7.4 million loss. Last year, they actually had a $9.6 million loss. So really, they've improved by like $1 million. Yeah. That's roughly what they're trying to say. Oh. With a 47% increase in revenue, you know?
Yeah. After all, you just kind of forget how small these things are.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It is quite small, but I thought it was interesting just to bring up, mainly because we have been talking a lot about, you know, the macroeconomic trends and so on and so forth. And Property Guru Coconuts, for you out there, I believe the way that they make revenue is through ads on their platform, right? That's their main source of revenue. So has there been, you know, much selling? Has there been much listing that needed to be done? that's effectively how they make their money. So they were looking at the different markets and they were saying, you know, Hong Kong, Singapore isn't doing too well. Hong Kong apparently was meh. Malaysia saw some good activity according to them. They blamed Singapore in the sense of rising taxes and stamp duties.
Huh?
I don't know why, right? So I don't actually believe what they're saying. I think, and you know, judging from what Reggie was saying today about the Malaysian market, so I don't know much about the Malaysian property market, but he was saying that there was an oversupply, right? Yeah. And you guys go ahead and do your research on that front. But if that is the case, would someone trying to sell their house actually put ads? I would say actually yes, that could be a good possibility because you're trying to beat the other person trying to sell.
Yeah.
So is that the market that we need Property Guru to be in order to make money? Right. Those would be those are certain questions that I am having, as opposed to a demand led one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not that. I mean, to me, a hot property market really isn't good for Property Guru. Right, because what they actually want is, you know, and I mean the ads come from agents, right? So what they actually want is people who need to sell their houses and agents who can bear with the long sales cycles, and so they keep, you know, refreshing their ads to push it up to like page one, this sort of thing, right? So if like imagine you list a house that afternoon it gets sold or you get five offers that day, Property Guru doesn't make much from that, right? But compared to you list the house and you don't have to keep listing for 5 months and nobody ever, you know, buys it because transaction volumes are down, people are scared. Seller has unrealistic asking, buyer has unrealistic, you know, buyer thinks there's a crash coming, don't want to buy. So, you know, I think we might actually, you know, and the Singapore property market is a bit odd and it's still quite hot, but you see transaction volumes falling, right? So, you know, we might actually be moving to kind of a place where it is semi-beneficial for Property Guru just because sales cycles lengthen, and that just means that people need to spend more on ads compared to the last time you list downstairs in your HDB block, people come and buy, right? You don't even list online. So terrible situation to be in. So I think that's kind of where it is. Like and this slowing macro is kind of in all their markets, right? Vietnam, Malaysia, you know, everybody in Southeast Asia is gonna feel that downturn a bit and, you know, lengthen that sales cycle a bit. So hey, that might actually lead to better revenue and better revenue growth for Property Guru.
That's why I thought I'd bring that up today. Like, is that even an opportunity in the next 6 months to a year, right? Given what's been what's happening in the market, people are saying, you know, hey, can I afford this sort of interest rate? So I need to downscale, blah, blah, blah. Those that have over leveraged as well in other countries, or it could even be in Singapore, right? Yep. We'd see how that would work in the next quarter or so. But this could be something to keep an eye on. Again,
sales is 7.5. That's not too high. Yeah. And they're at like lowest ever, like, okay, not lowest ever, but almost like all time low.
Exactly. They are at the all time low, although the indicative price of $10 or whatever it is probably not right. You probably might be looking at what it stagged. I think it stagnated at $8, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I think it started trading like once it de-spec'd at $8, then it crashed all the way to $6, $7.
Six.
Then it rallied a bit, then it crashed like $4, and it's been about $4 plus ever since
then.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's about there, right? Can it go lower? I honestly don't know.
Low can go lower.
But I do see a little bit of an upside. But I think one thing that they have to, or one thing that we should take into consideration, is that I think they're very much a price taking one. That means it would depend on the market conditions, oversupply, longer sales cycle on selling houses. Those things would drive their revenue forward.
Yep. And I guess a kind of related question is, you know, I think most countries have two or three big property listing portals, right? It's also like in Singapore, at least you have Property Guru and 99Co, if not more, or random stuff like Oh My Home and all that kind of stuff. No, is it really defensible? Do they have a strong mode? All that kind of stuff. It's still up for debate, right? And I think you are not, I mean, at 7.5 price of sales and at, you know, still a loss-making company, somehow, I mean, they've been operating for about 20 years. Why can't they turn a profit? I don't get it. They're not a new company, you know? They've been around for a very
long time.
Right? They are not a 5-year-old or 10-year-old startup. They have just, you know, been going at this again and again and just can't seem to make money. So what's going on here, right? Will they ever turn a profit? What's the end game? I think that's the question. Domination of these markets, you know. I mean, they're kind of dominating now. Well, why can't they make money, right? What's going on? I think that's what is worrying for me about this.
Yeah, that's fair. And is there a need for them to look at other markets as well? I guess that would be another play, right? If they can't actually figure out what's going on in these markets and how they can turn a profit.
Yeah.
I guess that's where else can
you go, right? You can't, you are in pretty much all of Southeast Asia. You're not going to go to India or, you know, Bangladesh to pick up there. So, you know, it's going to be a struggle, I think.
Yes. I think they could be looking at Australia, if I'm not mistaken. They have thought about that. I think there was a press release where they sort of merged with, or not merged, but like sort of had a collaboration with an Australian real estate group.
Yeah.
So I guess in those manners, they could even try to expand.
Yeah.
Into these bigger transaction markets, you know, with a lot more buying power.
Yeah, or I guess they if they really have the tech, they could license it out to somewhere to somebody else who wants to compete in that market, right? So don't even need to make the investment cost there. But yeah, I mean, I think it all boils down to product, right? Product. I mean, obviously it's a useful service, but you know, it's really. Do they really have an edge in product? Can they really make money off their current business model? I think these are all still very challenging questions. And for such an old company, which has been around for so long, it's a bit worrying that they haven't quite figured that out. I mean, Uber has figured it out, right? Uber has positive margins now. Grab hopefully figures it out one day. Shopee hopefully figures it out one day. But you know, they have seen other people do it. So there's a template there. What's up with this?
Yeah, those are pertinent questions. Let's see how that plays out. I mean, we don't know how the management works, right?
We'll see. Yeah, even for US as a company, their disclosures aren't like, you know, the typical US 300-page type earnings reports. I think it's probably one of those because like small or micro cap that nobody really covers, even though they are quite big in our area.
In our sphere. Yeah.
Yeah.
Globally, they're still tiny, right? Yep. You just talked about Olam and then now we're talking.
Hey, Olam big, okay. I mean, it's like 10 times bigger than Property Guru.
Yeah, exactly. And now we're about to talk about something that is 100 times bigger than Olam. So, I mean.
Yeah, I don't know what Samsung market cap. Let me go ahead and Google now. Alamak, why did they give me in one?
$405 trillion Samsung Electronics alone.
Okay, sorry, that's 325 billion USD. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Anthony, yes. For our last story, tell us a little bit about why we should worry about Samsung.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you should worry. If you were a shareholder last week, your worry is gone, right? They announced pre-earnings guidance and it was bad. Like, you know, they were saying, oh yeah, we expect this quarter profits to fall 69%.
Wow.
You know, our revenue year on year is down 8.6%. You know, so last year was a good year, obviously. But you know, operating profit is down, revenue is down, and operating profit is down so much more than revenue, right? So it's not just failure of sales. It's also kind of a cost control or
increasing costs,
a capex or investment, you know, type of issue. So yeah, I think that's the big headline. And of course, they go, oh yeah, you know, why is it so bad? Macro, right?
Everybody's go-to, bro.
I mean, I've kind of talked about this before with NVIDIA and AMD, where they were kind of, oh yeah, we have too much chip inventory. We need to clear that at a discount. And that has kind of meant that, you know, and I mean, for Samsung, they're in a slightly different market. They do more memory chips than anything. But that has just, I think, I don't know if that actually made it an episode, but we talked about that with Reggie before as well. And it's, oh yeah, this is commoditized, you know, China's taking over the world in this respect with Yangtze memory and all of that. So, you know, why even bother, right? Like it's just not going to be great. And I think that has kind of been borne out by this, I think, NAND chips, NAND chips, and all that, that their unit prices have just gone down like second half last year. So it all kind of makes sense. Oh, but they're still profitable, right? Samsung is not lost. Samsung Electronics is not loss making. They are still expecting, what, 3.4 billion in profit. So only a price to earnings, you know, at a of 25, if you analyze that, the run rate. So not too bad, not too bad.
What was the expected?
4.7. So they missed it by 40%. 1.3 billion.
Wow.
still big.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so at least they're still putting... This is, by the way, is this Samsung Group or Samsung Electronics?
Oh, it's Samsung Electronics only. So it's chips, phones, TVs. Yeah, that's the big three.
Got it. And I mean, we'll obviously find out more about how the cost increase during the earnings call. What do you think it is besides, you know, logistics? Do you think it's raw materials or anything like that?
No, I think it's mainly CapEx. So they have actually come out and said, like, and they compare it to us, right? When should we invest? We should invest when everybody else is not investing. You know, so Micron, I think we talked about a few weeks back, they were cutting forces, they were decreasing CapEx. SK Hynix were decreasing, you know, CapEx as well, and cutting jobs. So Samsung went, haha, guess what? I have money, right? I'm a huge conglomerate. I've diversified business lines. Let me build more capacity. Right? So I built more foundries, partially to do memory, partially to do like 3nm, 5nm chips, and hope to compete with TSMC. So I think that is their strategy. We have cash, we have a strong balance sheet, you know. We can do this. We'll push through the downturn and this glut. You know, and in doing so, we are kind of exacerbating the glut because I think they added 10% in memory capacity over the past quarter, right? So they really can't sell. And then they added 10% more capacity, confirm cannot sell. So it's, I think that's kind of an issue. But maybe, you know, a year or two down the line, when we push past this and we are into the upcycle, when current inventories are depleted, you go, hey, suddenly, you know, Samsung and in the memory chip space has gained another 10% market share or 5% market share, right? Because they were there for people when they were accessed, they were cheap, you know, they could build it up quickly and they can supply quickly because they have so much capacity now, right? And, you know, if that is a world that, you know, all the Chinese memory chip manufacturers are sanctioned, because that might be a case, you know, Yangtze Memory is already on some sanctions list somewhere already, then all these people, all the current buyers from China has to go somewhere, right? Yeah. Like, that's a problem with a de-globalized world. You have two different supply chains and, hey, you know, Samsung could be the one dominating the one outside China more than it already is. I mean, they are already the market leader. They could just be market leader times two or that 1.5.
Yeah. And they could see that sort of gap, right, or an arbitrage. Yeah. So invest now so that when we have sort of cyclical issues, we will be the first ones to act.
Yes, and you know when the cycle turns, when people really need chips, guess who can make them? Whereas all of quickly, you have to hire back your people, right?
Yeah.
You know, and onboard them again and all that kind of stuff. Or you have to start building factories again. So I kind of see it as the right move, but obviously it's not great in the short term, right? And there's no guarantee of the longer term.
Exactly.
Yeah, and of course their phones and TVs not doing well because recession, right? And also because you probably changed your phone or TV last year or the year before during COVID. So why would you buy a new TV now? Doesn't make sense.
And COVID would have been the time where all of this would have been changed, right? Hey, I got a little spare money. Let's buy a new TV. I'm watching it every day, right? Yeah. So
exactly, right? Demand pull forward. Now no more demand. And we are hitting a recession. Everybody save money. Or we don't want to buy Samsung, too expensive. We buy like TCL or some random brand. I bought a Sharp, which is surprisingly cheaper than a Samsung. So Yeah, Japanese made, and it's cheaper than Samsung. I don't get it. But and not as sleek like Samsung prettier, you know. But yeah, I think that's that I think is kind of the headwind for Samsung right now, right? Besides chips, there are other big business lines, smartphones, TVs, they are very consumer focused. And if the global consumer is tightening their belt because everybody's scared of recession, then it's not going to be pretty la, in terms of sales.
Wow, such a sad episode today, Anthony.
What good news
all
is
about
there?
Recession.
if I was retiring, yes, I'll agree. It's super sad. But this to me is like a super exciting time, right? Because I think if you can, and even if you don't want to pick companies, in which case, I don't know why you're listening, but if you do want to, you know, just buy index. But this is kind of a time, I mean, it's great, right? You can, if you want income, just buy bonds. You know, it's 4, 5, 6% returns for very minimal risk, depending on what type of bonds you want to buy. So hey, you'll get real returns on your money, right? If not, I think I have friends who just like park 100K at UOB, right?
DBS multiplier account.
Yeah. No, UOB now higher. So like let's spend 500 on a credit card, salary credit thing. Then they got like a few $100 in interest. Like, hey, great, what? You know, why not? So if you have cash, you can always do that. Or you can buy shares and, you know, hope that 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the line, you made the correct choices and that's exponentially more, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, I think investing in 2020 and 2021 was fun and easy because number just go up, right? I buy today, tomorrow go up 10%, I feel very sure. But, you know, unless you sold, which I don't think a lot of people did because every day go up, why would you sell, right? It go up 10%, I sell. It go up another 30%, I feel sad because I already sold, I cannot buy back. You know, this is a good time if you are long-term, if you don't need the money now to buy, right? I think that the fear is really, I lose my job. I even asked my boss last week, am I going to lose my job? If I go lose my job, tell me, you know, I go find a new job now.
Wow, yeah. The nerve. Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I can find a job, right? But you need to tell me, you cannot just suddenly fire me. Like, it won't be fair.
Yeah, I mean, in all fairness, we are definitely looking over our shoulders, right, with regards to this job thing. So I personally as well, right, because look at all the tech industry that we've been hearing, Anthony. Was it ByteDance, Salesforce? Wow, shag.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think on your tech side is shag. On my transactional side is also quite shag. Like, I think this is the first, last year, it was probably the first year where I had Christmas, like, quite free. Like, there was still work, but I think it's the first time in, since 2014 when I started in a law firm that, you know, I was actually, oh, free during Christmas. And my wife was like, hey, do you get fired? Why are you working? Every year Christmas, you're damn busy because people need to sign by Christmas or sign by New Year, you know, that kind of random stuff because they want to close out the year high. So last year I was like, oh, you know, no transaction volumes. My bosses are worried. I'm like, oh, yeah, stay at home, leave back. Yeah, should I clear leave? Maybe I don't clear leave. I work from home anyway, right? So what's the point of clearing leave and staying at home? Yeah, so but I think if this continues for another 6 months, people will really start worrying about, at least on my side, about where deal flow comes from. Because we can't just keep, you know, doing this random stuff forever.
Yeah. Right. And on that dreaded bombshell.
It's fine. We have Thank you so much. You have emergency funds. You'll be good.
Fair. All right. Thanks, Coconuts, for listening in. We hope to give you a bit more news next week as well. Let's see how we do.
Maybe more good news, TSMC.
Yes. Maybe more good news as they come out, what, Thursday, right? So in a couple of days, it'll pop up. Maybe we can talk about TSMC. Why not?
Why not? You can talk about it. I'll find like Fraser's Logistics or something to talk about. Okay.
Nice.
DBS.
Yeah, DBS. All right. Thanks, Coconuts. We'll see you soon. Bye.
See you. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode with me, Rakesh. And trust that you learned something today. If you enjoyed the session and want to be part of the banter, join our community Telegram group or follow us on social media. We also have a weekly newsletter to get a digest of the news we covered. To sign up, please click the description below. As always, we love your feedback, so share that with us at hello@thefinancialcoconut.com. Thanks, and stay safe.